The following is part of a conversation I had with Frank Macy in December of 2006 as we were discussing Bob Smurthwaite and his relationship with Jim Walker and American Junior.
When Jim started losing his health and all that in the early 50s, and they were starting hitting into troubled times, and then during that time, well, Jim had filed a lawsuit against Roy Cox for infringement on his patent, U-Control patent, and all that. Anyway, it went to trial. And it was just a judge only, no jury. And the judge voted in favor of Roy Cox. The judge determined he nullified Jim's patent on the U-Control patent, and that opened the whole door for Roy Cox. Well, Jim called Bob from L.A. and told him that, you know, he was done, that history was done, and American Junior was wrapped up as far as he was concerned. There was no future in that. And he said, because he was thinking about his health and the strokes and all that, and he said, he told Bob, he said, Bob, he says, I want to give you all the material, all the tooling and everything to produce the Firecat. It's all yours. And that's when Bob had suggested to Jim that they go ahead, AJ, go ahead and produce it. Well, after Jim died, well, Pachter bought the whole thing and all, but Bob had the tooling and the rights to the Firecat from Jim at that time. Pachter finished producing the Firecat, but it was Bob's baby, and it's a little confusing there. At that time, that Jim had given the tooling and all to Bob, the building and the tooling and supplies and all that. That's when Bob became known as J. Roberts Manufacturing, and because he wanted to do it for American Junior, for Jim Walker. But when Jim told him that it was all over, and boy, I could see in the photographs, I could see Jim's sullen look suddenly appeared, and he was never the smiling Jim Walker.
So this would have been like what year would you think?
50, in the mid-50s, and up to when he died in 58.
Right.
Pachter continued buying the company from the successors, from the beneficiaries, from the family, but they phased it out, and they never did. Bob made the Firecat, kind of haphazardly for Pachter, but they were changing everything.
So he didn't have the rights to sell it. Pachter owned the
rights,
but he had all the tooling.
Yeah. And so when Pachter phased it out, well, that was the end of the Firecat. Bob never used that in his own, what came to be known as J. Roberts flight control. He tried to talk Jim into the three-line control. And Jim liked it, but that's when his health was failing, and the lawsuit prevailed and all of that and went against him. And Jim just lost it. He just said, no, that's it. And so Bob formed J. Roberts Flight Control, or three-line control, and J. Roberts Manufacturing. That's what he became known as, a three-line and carrier, and speed control, you know, motor control. And
it became pretty popular.
His own kits. For control line carrier and all that, and spin and scales. And so Bob just continued there. And filled the gap, you know. But I asked Bob, before I understood all that, I said, well, how do you come up with the name J. Roberts? And he says, well, that's an acronym for my name. He said, who could remember the name Smurthwaite, you know? And it's just the way Bob talked. And I said, well, you got a point. And he said, but J. Roberts is J for James Robert, my middle name, Smurthwaite.
Mm-hmm.
So it's J. Roberts. It's easy to remember.
Yeah.
And so that's how he came with that.
Yeah. Well, you know, you think about it, who would remember Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Well,
so it's like, you know, just...
Good point.
That's kind of a weird
one. Good point. Yeah.
So what year did Jim lose the patent?
About 1955, as I remember. And this was incredible. That destroyed Jim, because he was the only one that had promoted U-Control was his patent number name for his system, but control line flying was, you know, started by the Chinese 4,000 years ago with kites, you know, at the control line, you know. And so, anyway, well, Bob floundered on his own for a few years after that as Jay Roberts and did very well, but he never, never promoted himself. He never pushed himself. And he never, as even Jay Roberts, you don't see until later on when he became, through partners again, GS Products. Was a G, I don't remember what G stood for. It was part of his initial for his partner, latter-day partner. But the S was Smurthwaite. But you didn't get that from GS Products International, you know, and that's what he was known as. You know, and then he went to Jim Roberts, which I helped him design that logo and for radio control, sport flying, and all that. Jim Roberts, so he wanted to take advantage of, and I was the one that talked him into doing, capitalizing on an existing name that he had used historically, Jim Roberts, mm-hmm. J. Roberts. So he settled on Jim Roberts, and then I did design work for that. So there's a lot of. But that's the very last days, yeah. See. But Bob was not a self-promoter. He didn't promote himself, and he let people take advantage of him and all of that. So that's where Bob had great ideas, great genius as far. See, he grew up as his dad was a millwright, and Bob grew up in the 30s working in the mills with his dad, learning all the machinery and tooling and cutting saws and blades and all that stuff. So he knew woodwork. He knew what cut wood and what made. And that's what you see here in the beauty of these kits. And Jim saw that immediately. He identified that, you know. So Bob not only knew wood and model aviation and airplanes, but he knew the production techniques. Bob was proud of the fact that he always did his own tool making. He did his own tool making. I remember when I went down there many times to Baker or LeGrand, when it was at LeGrand, and I could never get him to show me how he did some of his tooling. He would tell me briefly and then get off of it, you know, because he didn't want it stolen again, you know. And that's what, okay, there's so much stuff, you know. So anyway, that's kind of capsulizing here, a lot of history in just a few brief comments.
Do you talk about when he first met Jim? Was that when he came up and Jim saw him flying?
Oh, they first met way back, and I got that in Bob Smurthwaite's history, but they first met back before the war. Bob came up to Portland to join the Army in 1941, after we had gone to war, after Japan had attacked us and gone to war. So Bob came up doing his patriotic duty to enlist. Well, he enlisted and all that, but when he came up to Portland during some of the break there before he would get back to the enlistment procedure, well, he was stayed with a friend here in Portland, and Bob brought his control line airplane with him. And Bob and his friend were flying his old Hinkle over at Grant Park, Grant High School there. Jim lived three blocks away on U.S. Grant Place, and he heard the noise, I mean, of an airplane motor, and came to see who was doing what, because Jim, he was the one that flew. He didn't know anybody else did, you know. And that's when they met, and Bob said that Jim stood in awe watching him fly his control line, and I've got all of the mechanics for his procedure of the mechanism that Bob could have claimed he invented control line, you know, but he didn't push it, but anyway, he met Jim there, and Jim had his fireball with a big super psych engine in it, and he said, "Well, here's my airplane." He says, "Here's what I do," and all that. And they introduced themselves, and so Bob challenged him to a race. Well, they did that. Bob beat the socks off of him. outflew him tremendously. His flame was much faster and better control than Jim's U-Control Fireball with a big engine in it. And Jim was flabbergasted. He was so impressed with Bob, though, that he didn't, he says, I got to show you my shop, my business. So I took him over to 31st and showed. And that's where they just fell in love with each other at that point, and they were friends from there on. But at the time, Bob was waiting for acceptance in the enlistment, and he was told, well, it'll be several months before the Army will call you, before you get orders as to where. So Jim says, well, why don't you just go to work for me now? Which Bob did. So Bob worked for Jim for 3 months until he was called into the service. And that's where it started. Anyway, and then consequently, well, they communicated during the war. Bob served in the CBI theater, China, Burma, India, Flying Tigers Squadron, and which ultimately went in the supply flights over the...
What did he do then?
He was a flight engineer. He developed a hearing defect in Asia, an infection that prevented him from becoming a pilot. Otherwise, he was going to be a pilot. He wanted to be a pilot. So that was a big desire. But he became a flight engineer in the service there and for the Flying Tigers, which became ultimately the Flying Tigers airline. Anyway, and so right after the war, well, Bob came back and went to work for Jim Walker in 1946, right after the war, after he was discharged. And he worked for Jim up through 1948, and he developed all the tooling and procedures and everything for the AJ-74 and the 404, changing from the old P-39, you know, updating it to and using the new techniques, sleek curve, carving and shaping, and Bob developed all that. Jim was totally impressed. Bob told me that anything that he wanted, Jim got it for him. He gave him a flat-out free one of whatever. He said, he treated me like royalty, Frank. Never did anyone treat me the way Jim Walker treated me. And so that's when he said that he let it be known he just hated Portland, hated it. Just he'd grown up in beautiful Baker City, Baker County, way down in southern Oregon, or eastern Oregon, gold country of Oregon, you know, and open space, you know, and all that. And he hated the traffic. Well, it got to him to the point he just couldn't handle it anymore. And so Jim realized this, and he didn't want to lose Bob. So he concluded that Jim would set Bob up in business down in Baker County, Baker City, for American Junior Production. And that was how that came about.
So was it an American Junior company, or was it his company?
No, Bob Smurthwaite. It was just, he was a subcontractor for American Junior. He kept his own identity, but it was owned by American Junior. And his tooling and all the machinery and everything, Jim had owned it all and set Bob up in business to do that. And so basically when Jim's health failed and the lawsuit prevailed and everything went to hell, well, Bob, it was Bob's business anyway. Jim just turned it over to him, all that. So that's part of the sad story.
Yeah, I mean, there's a good story in there.
Oh, this is incredible.
It's just towards the end.
And nobody else knows that. Wow. See, nobody else knows that.
Well, I mean, a lot of this, the reason you know this is because you talked personally to
hours,
Bob, you know.
Hours, yeah. I had hours of tapes that were lost in the flood. Yeah, and so this is all from my memory.
Yeah.
You know, and I had hours of tapes. Scott, I can't tell you how many trips I made down there to Bend, and then on down to La Grande, and then on down to Baker. And then I saw Bob's shop and saw the tooling, and he eventually showed me some of the machinery and equipment that he and Harry Fosbury together made when they were together at American Junior. They had a sanding machine. Whatever happened to it, I don't know, after he died, but a sanding machine that it would sand both sides of the wood at the same time, measured in the micro thousands, that it was so perfect. It was so intricate, and the adjustments were so fine-tuned. But he and Harry Fosbury were the ones that developed that, and for their own use, for their own production, for American Junior.